Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg ad-free and right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a car. It's the two-door coupe that was there for your first drive. The hatchback that took you cross-country and back. And the minivan that tackles the weekly carpool. For the cars you couldn't live without, trust Amica Auto Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week, coming from Atlantic Canada. And one of my favorite cities, Halifax, in Nova Scotia. I've been coming here for more than 30 years, and with good reason. It's the people, it's the history, and yes, it's the air. It's one of the places where I sleep the best. And when I'm awake, I get to do a deep dive into the culture and history, and in the last 10 years, even the food scene. But it all starts with the history, and Mike Savage, the mayor of Halifax, tells that story. Then I'll speak with the fire chief. We all know about the Canadian wildfires, and we'll get his take on what's really going on. And then we'll go deep into the harbor of Halifax, one of the deepest natural harbors in the world, with Scott Armour. Born and raised in Halifax, he also built the Muir Hotel right on the water. And that's just the beginning. And finally, an airline you probably haven't heard about, but should. It's actually the little airline that could, Porter Air. Where they fly from and where they fly to might surprise you. First up, the mayor of Halifax.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Mike Savage, Mr. Mayor, welcome.
Peter, nice to be with you. You can just call me Mayor Mike.
Well, whatever happened to the title then?
Well, when I was elected mayor, which was over a decade ago, I told people I didn't want to be called Your Worship. That's the normal honorific for a mayor in Canada.
Oh, I can't wait to call you Your Worship.
No, I said, look, I don't want to be called Your Worship. Just call me Mayor Mike. And then about a year and a half after that, I was invited to Belfast, the city of my birth in Ireland, and by the Lord Mayor. And I was introduced as the Right Honorable the Lord Mayor of Halifax. And I said, I can live with that.
But only in Ireland.
No, Mayor Mike.
Well, Mayor Mike, thanks for coming by.
Yeah.
You know, Halifax, first of all, we are in Atlantic Canada, number one. Number two, it's got such a place in American history. Because of World War II and because of what Canada did to
to help everybody out with all the convoys going across the Atlantic. People think the convoys were leaving from New York. No way. They were leaving from right here, right where we are right now at the Muir Hotel.
Absolutely. From the beautiful Muir Hotel. Yeah, you know, this is where they started. This is where they went. Yeah.
I mean, we are right here on the waterfront. In fact, the Maritime Museum is right next to us. All that history is there.
And the last surviving convoy, HMS Sackville, HMCS Sackville, which is a living museum of the convoys of World War II, about which there have been movies made. But a great story, yeah.
Of course, the most recent movie, which may not have been about that convoy, but was Greyhound with Tom Hanks.
That was about that. That was the convoys. Absolutely correct, yeah.
Amazing stuff. Yeah. And, of course, the Titanic.
So the Titanic, a few years ago, I was in Belfast on that same trip, as a matter of fact, and they took me to the Titanic Museum. And when there was a bunch of visiting scholars who were there for a convention, and when they heard the mayor of Halifax was there, they asked me if I would go and talk about Halifax's connection to Titanic. I said, sure, when? They said, now. I said, let me just go to the bathroom. I went in the bathroom and I Googled Halifax Titanic, just to make sure I had my facts right.
So but yeah. What you're telling me, Mr. Mayor, is when in doubt, you Google.
Yeah. Who doesn't, right?
Okay,
who doesn't?
Fine.
But also, I mean, so the Titanic was 1912. 1917, this was the home of the Halifax explosion, the largest man-made explosion in the world prior to Hiroshima.
Tell me more about that.
Well, down this harbor.
Where we're sitting right now.
Yeah. The Mont Blanc and the Emo collided. They were two ships. It was December the 6th of 1917. World War I was raging in Europe. These two ships collided in the Halifax harbor just before 9 o'clock on December the 6th in the morning. And just after 9 o'clock, they blew up, and 2,000 people were killed, almost 10,000 injured, 1,000 people made blind. It was the beginning of the CNIB, the Institute of the Blind, here in Halifax. It was the largest man-made explosion in the world before 1945. And just to give you a sense of how much it hit this community, there's a woman that I feel a connection to, though I never met her. She died in 1957, but her name was Mary Eugenia Hinch. And she woke up in the morning of December the 6th, 10 kids off to school, her husband off to work. And within an hour, all 10 kids were killed. Her husband was killed. Her three surviving siblings were killed. Her mother was killed in the Halifax explosion. And she was found almost a day later under the rubble and the snow, and she was pregnant with Hubert, who was born in April of 1918. I mean, think about that. All your 10 kids, husband, you know, your mother, your siblings, like it just devastated the north end of Halifax and Dartmouth, including the indigenous community, the African Nova Scotian community. So, yeah. And that forged the relationship with the city of Boston in the U.S. because the people in Boston immediately sent help up because the trade routes had historically been north-south, not east-west. And so the people of Boston came to our help. They sent nurses and doctors and medical equipment. And so every year we send a Christmas tree down to Boston. It goes up in the Boston Common. It's a great event and a great connection to this very day. I've been down a number of times for that. It's an amazing connection.
Now, I find this hard to believe, but it's true. It's the second largest ice-free harbor in the world?
It's the second deepest natural harbor in the world behind Sydney, Australia.
Wow.
And those boats you see, the ferry system, it's the second longest continuously running saltwater ferry in the world behind only Liverpool, Mersey.
And another little tidbit that people don't realize is Cunard started here in Halifax.
Of course. Almost, well, just down here. And the reason I know that is I used to be the general manager of a company called S. Cunard, named after Samuel Cunard. But Samuel Cunard started here. And
most people think it was English, but
yeah, yeah. Oh no. Well, see, so my family, most of my relatives are English and they call it Cunard. Over here, we call it Cunard. but there was a ship's chandlery company, the Queen Mary, the Queen Elizabeth, a great history, the Britannia. And I think it was 1843, the steamship, a whole new era of commercial travel across the Atlantic Ocean. And that was
right.
Mr. Samuel Cunard. Yeah.
Those are the crossings.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
100%.
And of course the Titanic was heading here.
The Titanic. Yeah, so now, as I told you, I was born in Belfast, so I got it on both ends. Because
those are the guys who built it, excuse me.
Yes, and they said that, look, it was good when it left here. and so the history of the Titanic, of course, is somewhat well known, but the Carpathia, I think it was out of New York, came up and got the survivors, but
right.
It was a number of ships out of Halifax that went and recovered the dead, brought them to Halifax, laid them out in places which are historic properties now. Historic buildings in Halifax.
Well, we're talking to Mike Savage, I'm going to say it again, the Lord, the Right Honorable Lord Mayor of Halifax.
You got it, right? You got it.
Okay, you're going to let me say it.
Listen, it sounds right coming out of your mouth, Peter.
Do they still fire the noon gun every day?
Oh, yes. And you could be here all your life, and there's still moments when it catches you off guard. So, yeah.
But for people who have not been here before, when they first come, what's the first surprise for them? What's the thing that surprised them the most?
So, it depends where you are. I think for a lot of people, they think of Halifax as kind of a quaint city on the water with fiddles and lobsters and bagpipes, and we have all of that. But we're also, as you can see, a very modern city. We're sitting here in one of the most beautiful hotels in Canada, North America, probably brand new.
It is. I know this is radio, but it is stunning.
Yeah, it's a stunning place, and we have a great waterfront. I mean, to walk the waterfront, I look out the window over here, and you see down to the bicycle thief and to our beer garden on the waterfront. I've had many. I get to go to conventions of people who are coming in to visit. And a few years ago, I think it was the International Suspension Bridges Association. They bought me.
I've not been to that convention.
You got to go to that one. It's probably a great place to hang around, but not hang off. But anyway, so they said to me that this is the most beautiful waterfront we've been to, and they'd been to San Fran and lots of different places. So yeah, we're proud. The waterfront is here. As a city, we're big, physically large. We're 5,500 square kilometers. We're monstrously large, which gives us the opportunity to have a beautiful downtown. It's vibrant, a lot of kids, a lot of places to eat and drink and have fun, but also some natural wilderness areas that are very special.
And your biggest challenge?
Well, I think, as it is in a lot of cities in North America, our challenge is that the growth of the city, and Halifax was the fastest growing large city in Canada in 2022. We grew by 4.5%. In a year, 20,000 people. The big challenge is that
how do you manage the growth?
The growth. And, we have people that aren't succeeding. And so we have people living in tents in the heart of the city. And so that's for sure that's a challenge for all cities, is how do we try to make the success of the city more uniform.
So when you think of the food scene here, when you think of the art scene here, that is a relatively new phenomenon. I mean, my experience with Canadian food is about my experience with British food for a long time. It was not a fun experience. That's all changed.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. No, I like it. Absolutely. I mean, we're in a complex here that's got, seven or eight amazing restaurants right here in this complex and all along this waterfront. And you've got traditional places like the Five Fishermen. You've got great steakhouses. Argyle Street is just a phenomenal place to go. You can eat and drink and do what you want to do. A lot of culture. Live music still exists in Halifax. Yeah, so I think certainly the quality of the cuisine has gone up a lot. People used to come here and have lobster and clams and chips. You can't beat it. But I certainly think that the number of places close to where you and I are sitting right now, Peter, you could go to, 30 restaurants within, 4 minutes probably. You could go to 8 of them within 2 minutes just by going down the elevator.
So what you're telling me is you like to eat.
Look at me.
This is radio.
I enjoy the restaurant scene in Halifax. And we got the Micmac Tavern in Dartmouth, which is a great spot to go.
You can't forget Tim Hortons.
I don't know. I never heard of that. What is that? You mean the hockey player? Tim Hortons. Yes, indeed. Yeah, there's a few of those around.
You can't go anywhere now without seeing them.
Yeah, there's Timmy's everywhere.
There are a couple in the States.
Timmy's and Double Double.
I found a Tim Hortons in Las Vegas.
In Vegas.
There
you go.
There's a Canadian invasion.
I knew we had some in Kandahar when we were working with our friends in the U.S. and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So wherever sort of Canada goes, it seems like Timmy's follows.
Where do you like to go in Halifax?
So there's a place near where I live called Shuby Park. So we have a lot of parks. And in the city of HRM, we have over 900 parks and trails. Some in the water, some in the ocean, some in the lake, some in the woods. It's beautiful. So one of the places I go, Shuby Park. I love the waterfront, the Halifax waterfront, the Dartmouth waterfront. There's a place on our eastern shore, still within the boundary of the city, called the 100 Wild Islands, which is a phenomenal archipelago of islands, which is world class. People can come. It's,
how many islands?
Well, it's called I think it's still called the 100 Wild Islands. I don't think it's exactly 100, but it's pretty close. But it's amazing. So there's a lot of things. And, of course, I like to get out and see the people and see what's going on. And that's part of being mayor, is keeping in touch with the folks in the city.
Now, what were you doing before you were mayor?
So just before I was mayor, I was a member of parliament, so a politician. But before that, I was in business.
So you were the right honorable member of parliament?
No, I was the reasonably honorable a member of parliament for Dartmouth Coal Harbour, something I enjoyed very much. But I was in business before that, so I ran a retail fuel company here in Halifax, just down there where a brand new high-rise building, the Canard, it's called, is coming out of the ground. I worked for Nova Scotia Power, our utility, and I worked in the search business with a company called Ray and Bernstein and Robertson Surrett, who are still around. So I was in business for close to 20 years and then in politics for 20 years.
When you see Halifax the way it's evolved and how it's grown, you know, we talked about this a little earlier about managing that growth. How do you do that, though?
Well, you know, people often say about a city, this city will be great when it's finished. But cities are never finished. It's a journey more than a destination. And I think I want growth. When I became the mayor 11 years ago, we really weren't a city of growth. I don't know that there was a single crane in the sky of Halifax. And now there's something like 38. There's a lot of building. There's a lot of growth. And so, you know, people say, you like growth. I do. I like good growth. I like growth like, you know, where we're sitting now, which is strategic and thoughtful and works with the environment in which it is. I want good buildings. I want environmentally sensitive buildings. We are right on the cusp of being in the ocean, and we're affected by all the impacts that come with that, you know, sea level rise, storm surge. We've had hurricanes.
And you're seeing that.
We're seeing it. We've had more hurricanes in the last few years than we had, you know, in 25 years. Those one in 100 storms are more like one in 10 storms. The one in 20 storms we see almost every fall. And we had fires and we had floods this year. So we're impacted by all of those things. So the growth that we have needs to be sustainable and respectful of the environment. That's very important to me. And I want it to be good growth. I want it to be sustainable. And as much as possible, I want more people to be part of that growth.
And of course, as part of that, you have to legislatively adapt.
Sure, sure. 100%. You know, I think cities that are doing well these days are growing, but they're also recognizing that they can't be divorced from the environment in which they are. So this big edifice, this building that we're in now, which is part of a big complex, is designed to reflect the ocean as much as to sit beside it. And, you know, we have a really good development community in Halifax that respect and understand you know, what's expected of people and where they're going to live and where they're going to be entertained. I think we've done really well. Yeah, we have challenges. But, you know, as I say, the journey goes on. And just like we weren't a great growth city 10 years ago and now we are, we'll deal with the challenges of growth as we dealt with the challenges of no growth.
But, you know, it's interesting because on the world stage, for a while, you were sort of forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're coming out of it.
Well, that's for others to judge. I never forgot Halifax, Dartmouth. I think we've always had a great story to tell.
Well, you're from Dartmouth.
I'm from Dartmouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I know
the old city of Dartmouth. I'm very proud to be a Dartmouth guy. Although I was born overseas, I certainly think we're more international. We've embraced immigration. We've embraced the different cultures. It never fails to amaze me now. I can walk down the street and hear a language I haven't heard before. And I, you know, try to find out what it is. You know, maybe it's Farsi or Punjabi or something.
It's Brooklyn. It's Brooklyn.
Well, it could be Brooklyn or it could be Cape Breton. Could be a Cape Breton accent. So, yeah, we're a different city, I think, than we used to be. But we have all the benefits of our traditions, and we also have the opportunities of the future.
And the history.
So the history is good, and the history didn't start in 1749. The history of this place started with the Mi'kmaq, probably 13,000 years ago. And, you know, they are the custodians of this land. They did pretty well with it, the indigenous people of this land, and they have a great history. And only now, I think, are we all really understanding just how deep that and important that history is. We have 400 years of African Nova Scotian history here. You know, going back, you know, we've had a lot of history of racism in this community that people may not realize. So there's a lot of challenges, but there's also a lot of opportunities, and you let the opportunities overcome the challenges, and you put one foot in front of the other, and you march.
Well, you mentioned the indigenous community, which should not go unmentioned. How are you maintaining that culture?
Well, I think it's really important that we do, first of all. So for a long, long time, you know, I grew up here, and I grew up in a family that would be pretty progressive, but we very seldom talked about the issues of our First Nations people. My father spent a lot of time in the African Nova Scotian community when he came to Canada as a young doctor, you know, English doctor from Wales, actually. He started doing work in the African Nova Scotian community, which had been neglected and the victim of systemic racism. But it's only in the last number of years we've recognized the importance of the Mi'kmaq, the First Nations here. So we have some Métis people, but primarily we're Mi'kmaq here in Jibuktuk, which is the Mi'kmaq word for this land, which means means Great Harbor, which you can see why. And so we have peace and friendship treaties that were signed in the 1720s, but weren't honored.
I was about to say, they weren't honored, right?
They weren't honored. So we've done a lot. I personally take great pride in the fact that I think we've made a lot of steps to work with our Mi'kmaq populations here. There's a lot more that we can do, but I think we've come a long way. And again, it's evolving. It's important that we really listen to each other. And there's a lot of people that want to be more embracing of the First Nations of here, but they don't know how to do it. They don't know what the term is. They don't know what the language is. They don't know what the history is. But I think they want to do the right thing. And for me, as a community leader, I take great pride in the steps that we've taken in working with our First Nations here.
Are they teaching that history in the schools?
More, yeah. So now Mi'kmaq is actually a language that's being respected, an official language of Nova Scotia now.
Do you speak it?
I speak a little bit. Waliyexitbug, Gwe, Jalazi, Walaliyek, all the usual terms that...
Oh, wait. Tell me what that means.
Well, Gwe, you often open up when you're speaking, when you acknowledge the land, you might say Gwe and Jalazi, which is basically a welcome. So good day and welcome. And Waliyexitbug means I hope you're having a good day or some variation thereof. The way you say thank you is Walalan, but if you're speaking to a number of people, it's Walaliyuk. And so I don't speak it, but I try, and I'll be speaking it on September the 30th and on October the 1st. Those are significant days in Canadian history for peace and friendship and reconciliation.
And reparations?
Reconciliation, I mean, reparations is an ongoing discussion with all of our communities.
But at least you know how to say welcome and thank you.
It doesn't sound like much, does it?
Hey, it opens the door.
It means a lot, I think, to me that I can speak to people. At least they know that I'm trying to do the best I can to speak, you know, their language. I mean, I'm not even bilingual, you know, fluently. I'm not fluent in French, but I speak French whenever I can. I speak Mi'kmaq. I try to.
Where do you see that going?
To a better place. So I often tell people the peace and friendship treaties, which started in the 1720s, haven't really been honored. And I think they're a roadmap for the future. And it's still a bit of a sensitive issue for some people. I'm not talking about saying that we can't use the land. I just think we need to acknowledge that there were people here before us and they welcomed us here. And so it's a respect relationship for me.
And speaking of the land, within, 5 minutes of where we are now, you're walking that history.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right? It's not just the history of the Cunard Steamship Company. It's not just the history of the Titanic or the convoys in World War II. It goes back just a few hundred years before that.
It goes back, as I say, 13,000 years with the Mi'kmaq, and it goes back hundreds of years with other cultures that have been here, whether it's the African Nova Scotia, whether it's Gaelic nations, you know, the Scottish. I mean, Nova Scotia is Gaelic for New Scotland. So we have a very strong Scottish history, Irish, English, and more we have. So one of the cultures that's very strong here is the Lebanese. So the Lebanese started coming here many years ago as Assyrians. But this city, if you look out these beautiful glass windows that we're in, you know, probably 70% of the development is done by first, second generation Lebanese developers. And so that's another relationship.
So what you're trying to tell me is there's some really great mezza here.
There is some, there's a new restaurant in town called Olibang, and it is down the road here. It's not part of Queensmark, but it's a fabulous restaurant, brand new. But the Lebanese culture is very strong here, and I love Lebanese food.
So you're the kebab mayor.
Well, you know what the official food of Halifax is?
Tell me.
The donair. Do you know what a donair is?
You better tell me.
Donair, or the Halifax Donair, as they call it. They call it like a gyro or a gyro in New York City. It's unleavened bread with some concoction of meat, spices, tomato, onion, and a particularly unhealthy sauce. And so a few years ago, I'll tell you a little story, we had a motion to make it the official food of Halifax. I didn't think we should, but I had to cast the deciding vote. I voted for it because of the strong Lebanese connection.
So it's mystery meat, and the mayor endorses it.
Oh, you got to have one. If you haven't had one, don't leave till you had a donair.
My thanks to Mayor Savage. And as the mayor says, it's all about managing growth. One example of that is the development of the harbor of Halifax, in particular, the Muir Hotel right on the water. Scott Armour McRae was born and raised in Halifax, and he built the Muir Hotel, and that's, as you're about to learn, just the beginning.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset, hard to get better than that, unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Scott Armour McRae, of course, he's the chairman of the Armour Group. Scott, nice job.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm sure I'll still be apologizing because it's in our roots.
Well, I'm not going to let you apologize today. How about that? But I mean, you are a lifelong Haligonian. Did I say that right?
That's right. Haligonian.
Born and raised here?
Born and raised. It's in my blood.
What makes Halifax special to you?
I think, you know, there's a lot of subtleties to Halifax and the people that live here. I think from others in North America, you would sense the same kind of, you know, cultural background. But I think it's the connection to nature that most Haligonians share. The ability to get to beaches, the shore, within 10 minutes. There's a grounding, I think, effect that this happens. You have a city, a dynamic city, but it has its nature at its core. And I think at all times that's kind of grounding people here. And I think that's the part that makes it special. It was never the easiest place to settle and to live from the earliest settlers. And I think that resiliency, we've tried to express in this development, kind of shines through in the way that people act and how people feel about the world. They think generationally.
And it's also giving you a big sense of community.
That's right. Yeah, and I think that's shared. We've all had to survive being here. This is not the easiest place that we've lived through with generations. And so you develop a deeper sense of community when you face that kind of common view.
I mean, earlier on the show, we talked to the mayor, and he's talking about how Halifax is growing. And yet, it doesn't feel that it's overly grown. It doesn't feel like a big, big city. It feels like if I spent some time with you off the air, you'd probably know everybody in town.
Yeah, I think it's there's the common saying, it's not big enough for an opera, but too big to have an affair. And I think it has that.
Oh, I'm going to use that.
I think it still has that kind of touch point where you have connections to people, families know each other, but yet it's still got the, you know, the attributes of a city that most people want. It's much like many other cities, the kind of secondary cities that are really prospering in North America. And Halifax is right on the cusp of that.
And yet, a lot of people just don't know it still.
No, and I think there's that kind of sort of yin-yang, how much do we want people to know? I think, you know, we've grown past that as a community where Haligonians are feeling prouder. There's such a history here, as you've referenced. Some of the greatest things that have happened in Canadian history happened here. It's had a formidable impact on all of North America. And for a while, this was perceived as what's known as a have-not province. But the zeitgeist today is very different. There is that sense of, as we look out onto the harbor here by the Rise Again building, there is that sense that you can rise again here. And really that's what that building was intended to psychologically impart, is Halifax is rising again.
And where we are right now is where the British Navy used to hang out.
Well, that's right. Yeah, no, this particular site, and it's a very uncommon site for your listeners, it's really the center of the city. And you rarely in life get to build in what is truly the center of the city. So it has deep history, even though it didn't have historic roots, or it has deep history, even though it didn't have physical historic roots. And it was the site where the British Navy set up their battlements, and every king and queen, prince and prince that ever landed in Nova Scotia landed at this site. And so it's got an enormous history.
And of course, most people who watch World War II movies make the mistake of believing them. Actually, the convoys left from here.
That's correct, yeah, no. Coordinated from the site that we're at, that would have been out in the basin. And, you know, that is an often forgotten part. As we sit here, we're looking out over the last remaining frigate of those convoys, the Sackville, our naval memorial. And
that was a corvette.
That's right, and they built them so cheap because they didn't expect them to survive. So it's just sort of a fast.
They were guarding the convoys to take the torpedo instead of the boats.
That's right. They did not, and so there's only one left.
So you know you're in deep trouble if they said you've been assigned to a Corvette.
That's right. No, it's a fascinating story because they were built so cheaply, we have so few now. I mean, there's just one left to be able to use as a naval memorial.
And it's right here.
It's right next to, you're looking at it right now. Yeah.
When people come to Halifax, even when they stay at this hotel, what's the biggest surprise for them that they're not expecting?
Well, I think it's what you referenced previously, Peter. It's how Halifax has started to change. I think when they come to this hotel, you know, what's most important for us in this hotel was the concept of a hotel as a cultural institution, not your old heads on a bed thing, but to be able to truly feel like when I went to the Muir, when I went to Halifax, I felt the authentic sense of place. And I think when people come here and see the evolution of Halifax, from when sautéed was fried to today.
You do agree with that.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
They can get a different appreciation for its roots. They feel the authenticity. So I think that they're surprised that there is this modern nature to a city with such history that's on the move.
And of course, within about 20 feet of where we're sitting right now, or maybe 40 feet, is your Maritime Museum, which I wholeheartedly encourage people to go to. I immerse myself in that place. It's unbelievable.
No, fantastic stories there. I think we've had a very deep relationship with the Maritime Museum, whether it be bringing out Sable Island, which is offshore here, natural park, to the Titanic stories, to the convoy. It's a fantastic location, and right next door. And we try to bring some of those stories into Queen's Mark and into the Muir.
Well, the good news is you can't walk more than 100 feet and not have history here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, it's but yet it's still got that forward, that kind of juxtaposition of the new and the old.
My thanks to Scott. Now, for those of you who are my regular listeners, you know I'm also a volunteer firefighter. And wherever I go, I want to talk with the local firemen and firewomen. They know their communities best, and Halifax is no exception. Ken Stubing is the fire chief in Halifax, but he also knows the history of fire. And in Halifax, that's almost required. Chief, welcome.
Thank you very much, Peter. Certainly a pleasure to be here in our new home. I've been here for about 6 years, and can't think of a better place to end my career than in Halifax, Canada's Ocean Playground.
Well, thank you for that mission statement and that promotion. But the cool thing about Halifax is, if you look at the history here and what you've learned from history, something that predated both of us by many decades, of course, the famous explosion here in 1917, and what you learned about that, you know, Halifax certainly had its share of a disaster, you know, over 100 years ago.
Yeah, certainly that is a hallmark moment for Canada. It was actually the very first year that I started here that we were recognizing the 100th anniversary for that explosion. So certainly there were some events that went on in Halifax, but also our sister city in Boston. So I was fortunate to participate in events not only here in Halifax, but go down to Boston, where both mayors and myself and Police Commissioner Joe Finn participated in initially the events here. And since the Halifax explosion, Nova Scotia has donated a Christmas tree to Boston, which is put up in the Boston Camp Commons. It is lit
Christmas. The mayor told me about that, yeah.
Yeah, it is lit every year down on the Boston Commons. And on the first year I was here, the 100th anniversary, I went down there with our mayor and participated in that lighting as the tree was dedicated to first responders.
You know, we've seen all around the world this year extreme heat, consecutive days of plus 100 degree weather in places that never had experienced it before. We've seen the wildfires in Canada. We've seen the wildfires in previous years in Australia, in Greece, in Turkey, and of course in this region as well. How are you preparing for that? Is there any way to prepare for it?
Well, interesting for sure. In my previous role as the president of the International Association of Fire Chiefs, I participated in events across the globe talking about the effects of what we're dealing with less precipitation in the winter you know, accumulation of snow, changes in policy around how to manage forests that have happened over decades. And all of that has ended up creating some significant risk, including hurricanes that have been leaving fuel in the woods. So certainly this community has had wildfires in the past, but this year, despite the fact we were doing what we could to prepare our troops for dealing with that situation, we had a significant wildfire here in May that was an all hands on deck event for our organization. While we were dealing with that, there were fires up and down the west coast of Canada and the US. There continues to be evacuations in the Northwest Territories and in British Columbia. And obviously what happened in Hawaii is unprecedented.
You know, because you had all the makings of a perfect storm there and it all happened at once. I don't think people realize, as a firefighter myself, I've experienced it. I'm sure you have as well. It's scary. It's daunting. It's not controllable how fast fire actually moves.
Yeah, and it doesn't take the streets, right? It goes in the direction that the wind pushes the fire. So in order to stay in front of the fire, you need, you know, in order to be able to evacuate people out of the path, you need to take the streets to, you know, with your personnel. When we were dealing with that fire, one of the challenges is we're also not the authority of jurisdiction. So in Canada, that is the provinces and the territories. So while we worked closely together, the municipal fire departments across Canada are typically first in and usually there for the duration of the event. We had been prepared for that event in that we have issued personal protective equipment appropriate for that type of work. We put wildland firefighting gear on our apparatus. We have trained our officers and firefighters in basic wildland techniques, but we have historically fought much smaller fires exactly than what we experienced this year. And one of the other challenges across North America, actually, is that a large portion of the people who live in the community have moved into that wildland urban interface space. So it's about 33% of our population is now living through sprawl in that interface area, which certainly makes it difficult. You're not fighting a traditional wildfire, which is a normal evolution of forests. When, you know, the fire happens in the forest without homes and people dispersed in those flames, your strategies and tactics can be different.
Oh, sure. But in a situation like this, I would assume you're dealing with a crisis that you can't always control, because it's not just burning in one location and going in one direction. And you reach a flash point where when an ember hits something, it's doing it at such heat, it already explodes. I've seen this in many house fires when you have wind. You saw this in Maui. I mean, by the time an ember from that fire hit another house in Maui, that house was at such heat already that it just didn't smolder, it exploded.
Yeah, certainly I think the building materials that need to be used in those WUI areas, the wildland urban interface areas, needs to be non-combustible or certainly flame resistant material.
So what you're saying, Chief, is it's time for some new codes.
Yeah, certainly there is there's evidence out there that supports, you know, in Canada we call it Fire Smart, in the States the same program is called FireWise. It educates the public on how to landscape their yards, to keep the vegetation back, to use non-combustible building materials and gardening materials. So certainly codes are part of the equation, as well as how you design your communities, more than one way in and one way out, emergency exit routes. All of that has come to the top of the conversation and needs to be considered for all future developments, and we need to think about how we can adapt the communities that already exist.
And moving forward, you're training even more.
Yes, it was already in our WUI strategy to train our officers and our firefighters, and we are also training our cruise. That's well in flight. It was part of our business plans the last 2 years to train them on how to do critical risk assessments for people who live in the WUI and educate the community on that. So we continue to work that issue and do that to reduce the risk for the people who live in our community.
But the good news is, as you and I are speaking today, it's a beautiful day here in Halifax. Things are under control.
Yeah, we went from a really warm and dry spring to what has been a normally sunny summer to what's been a little bit more moist than usual. That actually led to some flood challenges that we had after the wildfire. And unfortunately, while we didn't lose or critically injure anybody during the wildfires, we did lose some citizens and residents of the area, certainly not right in Halifax, but on our borders where we assisted with the response. Unfortunately, there were some lives lost during the flood, but we're hearing it's going to be a bright, sunny afternoon and the start of a stretch of some sun, which is normally our summer weather.
The bottom line is be aware, but at the same time, be smart.
Absolutely. You know, we always try to be prepared for what we're going to be facing. And obviously, in the face of the changing environment, we are heading into hurricane season. So our teams are preparing for that eventuality if we hit that.
But other than those extreme challenges, you love living in Halifax.
It is one of the most beautiful areas in the country for sure. And I've lived across the country, including Banff. We are quite delighted to call Halifax our home, and I have no shortage of people who want to visit us for some reason.
My thanks to Chief Steuben. And last but not least is how you get to Halifax. At the turn of the last century, it might have been by steamship or train. These days, most folks would say, come by air, like Air Canada. But there's another airline, one of my favorites, and you've probably never heard of it. It's called Porter Air. It's the little airline that could. And it not only flies to Halifax, but it flies from one of my favorite, if not cutest, airports in the world. A small island a few hundred feet from downtown Toronto called Billy Bishop. Kevin Jackson is Porter's chief commercial officer. Kevin Jackson, the executive vice president and chief commercial officer of Porter. Welcome, sir.
Hi, Peter. Welcome to Halifax.
I'm telling you, I always love coming to Halifax. I've said this throughout the show. But I love Porter because, and please don't take this the wrong way, you're the little airline that could.
Absolutely.
I mean, you're not, you know, up until recently, you've only flown basically prop jets.
That's correct.
Right, Dash 400s.
Yep.
And you know what? They get you where you need to go.
That's right.
These are not obsessively long flights. I'm not on board for anything other than to get from A to B. And you get me there, but you're going to places that most Americans have never been, right? St. John's in Newfoundland.
That's correct.
Thunder Bay. I mean,
all over Eastern Canada.
All over Eastern Canada. And you're flying from what? You're flying from New York. You're flying from Boston.
We also fly from Washington and from Chicago.
There you go.
That's
so
right.
Very cool thing. But what is Porter?
So Porter is an airline that started about 16 years ago at our home base, as you said, in Toronto. It's Toronto Billy Bishop Airport, and we started with one route, which was Toronto to Ottawa, and we started flying that very regularly, focused on the business traveler at that time.
Ottawa, of course, being the capital of Canada.
That's right. So our number one was our first destination, and we have expanded our network across Eastern Canada over the last 16 years, and so today we serve 22 destinations with that Dash 8 fleet that you talked about, the turboprop fleet. And we fly it from Toronto, Ottawa, Halifax, and to all of these different destinations across Eastern Canada.
And of course, your major hub is Billy Bishop Airport in Toronto.
Which is, as you said, a great little airport.
When I say little airport, when I first flew to Billy Bishop, I landed. I was coming up to Toronto. I landed. I walked about 12 feet, got on a ferry boat.
That's right.
That went about 12 feet. And I was in downtown Toronto, literally.
That's right.
Now, is the ferry boat still there? Yes, but now you have a tunnel, and anybody gets there. But I've never been to an airport where you literally get off the plane, and you're in downtown.
That's right. Billy Bishop Airport is actually on an island There is a 400-foot strip of water that separates the island from the city itself.
That's it. I'm not kidding. 400 feet.
And there's a ferry that moves across that little spit of water to carry cars and fuel and supplies. You can also ride it as a passenger. But now it's connected to the city through a tunnel that goes under the lake and pops up in downtown Toronto.
And Billy Bishop was named for?
You're going to flag me on that one. So he was a World War II pilot that flew in the Canadian Royal Air Force.
Okay. Now, since you're based in Chicago, do you know what O'Hare was named for?
I do know that both Midway and O'Hare are named after World War II elements, but
yes,
I do not know.
But there's
the
a
O'Hare
great connection.
Story.
I'm going to give you the connection.
Yeah.
It's named for a pilot, you're right, named Butch O'Hare. But who is his father? His father was Al Capone's attorney.
I did not know that.
And his name was Easy Eddie, and he was nothing but easy. And Easy Eddie basically said to his son, don't turn out to be like me. And he enlisted and fought in the war. He died in the war, by the way. You'll see the statues of him at O'Hare. Right. And Easy Eddie, he got wiped out by the mob.
Interesting. Right. I didn't know that.
After he turned state's evidence against Al Capone. There's
cool.
your mob connection
That's
in
cool.
Chicago.
That's, as always,
I
we
just
need
thought
one.
I'd tell you.
That's right. We need one.
There you go. But now, the biggest problem with airlines is sometimes, historically, when you try to become too big, right? When you try to expand too much. What are your growth plans?
So, we went into COVID focused on our regional network within Eastern Canada and the Northeastern United States. And through COVID, we actually shut the airline down. And we did that because in Canada, unlike in the United States, demand dropped by 90% and stayed at that level for over a year. And so we took advantage of that opportunity.
Were there government bailouts?
No government bailouts to Canadian Airlines.
So nobody's mad at you now?
No.
Okay, good.
So what we took advantage of that time really to rethink our strategy as a business. And we took advantage of an opportunity to buy a brand new jet that is produced by Embraer in Brazil. And Porter will now be the launch customer of the Embraer E195 E2 aircraft in North America.
I will tell you, I was down in Brazil. I flew their simulator. It's a nice plane.
It is a beautiful plane. And one of the great value propositions of this aircraft that is just common to what Porter has offered for 16 years, there's no middle seats on this aircraft. Right, so it is a 2x2 configuration.
And you missed your entire branding message. You're the airline that doesn't have a middle seat.
We do not have any middle seats on any of our aircraft. The Dash 8, our original fleet, no middle seats. And this Embraer E195, which is what's great about it, is it has full North American coverage. So we now will be able to serve Canada and the U.S. down into Mexico and into the Caribbean with a fleet of aircraft where there is no middle seat anywhere on airplanes.
So are you giving me a hint that you're going to be flying to Los Angeles and San Diego soon?
That is certainly on our map, but we certainly did just announce our first U.S. destinations with this aircraft, and it is 5 destinations in Florida. We'll be flying from Toronto Pearson Airport, which is the other airport here, there in Toronto.
Because that jet can't land here?
That's correct. So, interesting point about Billy Bishop Airport is there's a jet ban on Billy Bishop Airport, which is why we fly the Dash 8 from that airport. So, as we look to expand our network, we had to do so from Toronto's Pearson Airport, which is the international airport. And so we just announced that from Pearson Airport, we're going to be flying to Fort Myers, to Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, and Tampa.
Just in time for the snowbirds.
Absolutely. It's that time of year for the Canadians. But on top of that, we're also going to be flying from Ottawa to Orlando and to Fort Lauderdale as well. So 7 new jet destinations that we just announced. But we will be expanding across the U.S. as we go through 2024 and into 2025. We intend to go all the way to the west coast of the United States, all the way across the south, different destinations. Not ready to announce those yet, but eventually into Mexico and the Caribbean, as I said.
Well, you realize now you can fly anywhere as long as you don't have a middle seat.
That's correct. And the other great value proposition when you fly with us is not only is there no middle seat, but every single passenger on our airplane gets free beer and wine, and we serve it to them in glassware. And they get a nice selection of snacks. And this is for everyone on the aircraft. And that's really been what's been important to Porter all these years as we compete in the Canadian marketplace and now increasingly in the United States, is we provide a level of generosity to our passengers that just does not exist on any other carrier in North America today.
Any Biscoff cookies?
No Biscoff cookies.
Oh, wait a minute. We got a problem.
Well, we actually do a really delicious cookie by Cookie It Up, which is a delicious bakery located in Toronto. And we serve their shortbread chocolate chip cookies on our flight, and they are addictive.
Could I have more than one?
I will gladly give you more than one.
What's your biggest challenge?
So obviously we're growing substantially as a business. We had 29, we still do today, we had 29 of the Dash 8 turboprops, but we have ordered up to 100 of the Embraer E195 aircraft. And so we're expanding greatly. As we're talking today, within the last 6 months, we've delivered 15 of those jet aircraft. And airlines do not grow at that pace. But we are expanding quickly, and we're doing it for two primary reasons. Number one, we have an existing customer base in Canada.
They're very loyal.
They are very loyal, and they're eager to travel with us across Canada and to other destinations in North America. So we've got that nice customer base. But the other piece is, in this business, if you don't have scale, you cannot compete. And so in Canada, we really only have two major airlines. I won't mention their names, but we have two major airlines in Canada. And if you want to compete with them, you've got to grow and get scale.
You got to step it up.
That's right.
So but please tell me, Kevin, please tell me you're always going to be flying to Billy Bishop.
Billy Bishop will be the center of our Dash 8 network. It is core to what Porter's original value proposition was. And, you know, we have 85% of the flights that come in and out of Billy Bishop, and we intend to continue to grow that business.
My thanks to Kevin, to Chief Steubing, to Scott Armour, and to the mayor of Halifax, Mike Savage. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, you know what to do. Log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Ion Travel Podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Ion Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Ion Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
If you like Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. Two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.